Think about the last time you scrolled through your social media feed. What did you see? A video from a war zone, maybe? A moon about a world leader? An angry, divisive comment thread? Now, what if I told you that you weren't just observing a conflict? You were on the battlefield.
That's a chilling thought, and it's exactly why this topic gets under my skin. I grew up with these platforms, you know? They were supposed to be about connection, about bringing people closer. But watching them get twisted into these instruments of division and propaganda, it feels incredibly personal, almost like a betrayal of that original promise.
It's the ultimate narrative hijack. As a storyteller, I'm fascinated by how stories shape our reality. But this is something else entirely. This is psychological warfare at a scale that would have been science fiction just a generation ago. We're not just being told a story. Stories are being actively weaponized against us in real time on a global stage.
And that is precisely what we are here to unpack today. This is a massive, complex, and frankly, a very scary topic. But it's one we can't afford to ignore.
Welcome to the Echo Chamber. In today's episode, we're decoding the role of social media in modern warfare.
We're going to delve into how nations are using these platforms as digital battlegrounds for everything from propaganda and recruitment to sophisticated psychological operations that can destabilize entire regions without a single shot being fired.
And later we'll be joined by experts who are on the front lines of this digital conflict, shedding light on how this new form of warfare is changing the very dynamics of international relations.
So stick with us as we attempt to make sense of the invisible conflicts shaping our world, one post, one share, and one like at a time.
So let's start with the fundamentals, because this isn't entirely new, right? The core concept, psychological warfare, or PSYOPs, is as old as conflict itself. Think of leaflets dropped from planes in World War II telling soldiers to surrender.
Or even radio broadcasts. I remember reading about Hanoi Hannah during the Vietnam War, broadcasting propaganda to American GIs. The goal was always to demoralize, to sow doubt.
Precisely. But the difference in scale, in precision, is staggering. A leaflet is a shotgun blast. A radio broadcast hits anyone who happens to be listening. What we're seeing now is a neurosurgeon's scalpel.
Because the platform learns from you. The leaflet doesn't know if you picked it up. Hanoi Hannah didn't know if you changed the station. But an algorithm knows you paused for 1.7 seconds on a particular video.
It knows and locks it. It knows who your friends are, what your anxieties are based on your search history, what your political leanings are. And it uses that intimate knowledge to tailor the next leaflet, so to speak, just for you. And the one after that, and the one after that.
So it's not just broadcasting a message anymore. It's having a million tailored, manipulative conversations at once, guided by a machine.
That's the terrifying leap. And it's why many experts have stopped calling it simple propaganda. The term that's gaining traction now is cognitive warfare.
Cognitive warfare. Wow. Okay, unpack that for me. That sounds significantly more sinister.
It is. Because the goal has shifted. Traditional propaganda wants to change your mind about a specific issue. You know, buy war bonds or our enemy is evil.
Right, it wants you to believe something.
Cognitive warfare wants to break your ability to believe anything at all. Its primary target isn't your opinion, it's your trust. Your trust in institutions, in the media, in objective reality itself.
So the goal isn't to get me to switch political parties. It's to make me believe the entire system is so corrupt and broken that participating is pointless.
Exactly. Or to flood the zone with so many conflicting narratives, so much noise, what the RAND Corporation calls a fire hose of falsehood, that you just throw your hands up and say, who knows what the truth is anymore?
And in that state of exhaustion and cynicism, that's where the real damage is done. You become passive. You disengage. And a disengaged populace is one that's much, much easier to control or influence.
And that passivity, that disengagement, it isn't an accidental byproduct. It's the intended outcome. It's a strategic objective. If you can convince a population that the truth is unknowable, you've effectively neutralized them. They won't march. They won't vote. They won't organize. They'll just scroll.
Because it's exhausting. I mean, I feel that myself sometimes. You see two completely contradictory headlines about the same event, both with sources, both shared by people you know, and the mental energy required to even begin to untangle it. It's immense. It's easier to just move on to a cat video.
And the architects of these campaigns are counting on that. They weaponize our own cognitive limits against us. But it gets even more layered. Experts in this field, they categorize this stuff. It's not all one monolithic thing.
Oh, how so?
They break it down into three shades: white, gray, and black propaganda.
Okay, like spycraft. White hat, black hat.
Something like that. White propaganda is the straightforward stuff. The source is clearly identified. Think of a press release from the State Department or a broadcast from the BBC World Service. You know who's speaking, you know their agenda, and you can judge the message accordingly.
Right. It's overt. We are the government of Country X, and this is our position. You can take it or leave it.
Then you have gray propaganda. This is where it gets murky. The source is ambiguous. It might be a news outlet that seems independent, but is secretly funded by a state actor. Or a think tank with a very neutral-sounding name that's pushing a very specific foreign-backed agenda.
So you can't quite pin down the intent. It feels like journalism or it feels like academic research, but there's a thumb on the scale you can't see.
Exactly. And then there's black propaganda. This is the truly insidious level. This is information that is designed to look like it's coming from the enemy of the people who are actually creating it.
Wait, say that again. So, a foreign power would create content pretending to be, say, a radical group from within their rival's own country?
Precisely. Or they'll create a fake persona, an account pretending to be an American veteran, for example, who spouts incredibly divisive, extreme views. The goal is to make the other side look deranged, to sow discord from within, and to make any kind of moderate compromise impossible. It's a false flag operation, but for information.
That is terrifying, because your natural defenses are completely down. If you see something you disagree with and you think it's coming from the other side, it just confirms all your worst biases. You don't question the source, because the source is who you already thought your enemy was.
It plays directly into our tribal instincts. And these campaigns are incredibly sophisticated. They don't just put out one message, they'll create multiple black assets. They might create a fake account on the far left that's calling for violence, and at the same time create a fake account on the far right that's also calling for violence.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just amplify each other.
So they're literally engineering the conflict, they're writing the script and casting the villains for both sides of the argument to make sure they clash in the most destructive way possible.
It's the ultimate divide and conquer. And it works because it doesn't try to persuade you with logic. The historian René Hobbes identified the key features. It activates strong emotions, it drastically simplifies complex information, it attacks opponents, and most critically, it appeals to your deepest hopes and fears.
And that's the core of it, isn't it? It bypasses the rational brain entirely and goes straight for the gut. It's not an argument, it's a trigger. And once that emotional trigger is pulled, it's almost impossible to have a real conversation.
Exactly. It's a trigger. And that's the part that you shouldn't. Honestly, it keeps me up at night because we're not just talking about political strategy anymore. We're talking about hacking the human limbic system. It's exploiting a fundamental vulnerability in how we are wired as social creatures.
And it's a vulnerability the platforms themselves are designed to amplify. That's the piece that gets me. This isn't happening in a vacuum. The entire business model is based on maximizing engagement. And what is more engaging than fear, than outrage?
That's the billion-dollar question, isn't it? Is it even possible to build a global town square that isn't immediately co-opted by the loudest, most aggressive, and most manipulative voices? Can a platform designed to hold your attention for profit ever truly serve the public good?
I don't know. I really don't. And for me, the biggest takeaway from all of this is the sheer loss of good faith debate. The space for nuance, for saying I'm not sure or it's complicated, that space just seems to be shrinking to nothing.
It gets squeezed out because nuance doesn't generate clicks. Complexity doesn't go viral. And when you lose that, you lose the connective tissue of a functional society.
You just end up with these two entrenched armies shouting past each other, armed with memes and misinformation supplied by who knows who.
And that, I think, is the most crucial thing to remember. The battlefield has changed. It's not a physical place anymore. The front line is in our minds. It's on our screens. And just knowing that, just being aware that when you scroll, you are stepping into a contested space, that awareness is the beginning of our defense.
A healthy dose of skepticism, not just of what you see, but of your own emotional reaction to it. Asking, why am I feeling this so strongly?
It's a huge topic, and we really only scratched the surface today, but it's a conversation we have to keep having.
Well, I think that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for joining us on this a pretty unsettling journey through the new front lines of modern conflict.
We hope it's given you a new lens through which to see your own digital world. This has been The Echo Chamber.
Stay safe and stay critical. We'll talk to you next time.